Just a couple of hours ago, former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his longtime business partner Rick Gates appeared in Washington, D.C. federal court. They pleaded not guilty to charges of money laundering and tax fraud. Those were the first indictments and charges brought by special counsel Robert Mueller. Now, the Manafort indictment may be grabbing headlines today, but there's an even bigger story out there, and it's found in other court documents also unsealed today. Apparently, on October 5th, former Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. And in that plea, he provided evidence that the Trump campaign was aware that the Russian government was trying to help Trump and that the campaign may have been open to accepting that help. Well, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders just held her daily press briefing a little while ago, where CNN's Jim Acosta asked the big question.
How is all of that not collusion?
Look, this individual was the member of a volunteer advisory council that met one time over the course of a year, and he was part of a list that was read out in the Washington Post. I'd hardly call that some sort of regular advisor, or as you want to, you know, push that he's like a senior member of the staff. It's he was not paid by the campaign. He was a volunteer on a council that met once.
And the individual that Sanders is referring to is George Papadopoulos. Well, let's get some perspective today from Noah Feldman. He's professor at Harvard Law School with a specialty in constitutional studies. Noah Feldman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Magna.
So first of all, just give us your reaction to George Papadopoulos' guilty plea, which nobody knew about until it was unsealed just today.
Well, it's remarkable because it's the first really concrete, definitive proof that we have of efforts by the Russian government to be in contact with the Trump campaign. Of course, we know from the Donald Trump Jr. meeting that's been widely reported of what may have been that indirectly, but this includes information about contacts coming from the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So it's a pretty direct link. And that's, I think, the most significant fact about it.
Well, so let's dig into some of the details then. Again, in this guilty plea that George Papadopoulos signed on October 5th, I mean, for example, there's in the plea, we learned that Papadopoulos, soon after he learned he was going to be a foreign affairs or foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign in early March of 2016, he then very quickly meets with someone who's referred to as the professor in this plea a couple of days later, and that the professor in April of 2016 told Papadopoulos about the, quote, thousands of emails that the Russians had about the Clinton campaign. And I presume these are the hacked DNC emails, which then weren't, you know, made public by WikiLeaks until July.
Well, that's possible. We know that there was a reference to thousands of emails connected to Hillary Clinton, and that's what the inference that you draw is a totally reasonable one. But we don't know that from the confession.
Right.
So that's still an inferential step that has to be made. I think, you know, the other thing that we have to say in all fairness is that presidential campaigns actually do have, all of them, a wide periphery of quote-unquote advisors who appear on lists and may or may not have an impact. Sometimes those advisors are hugely influential in a campaign, and sometimes they're entirely on the periphery. And we don't know what was the case here, except to say that Papadopoulos, by his own account, was in regular email contact with superiors in the campaign, and he communicated to them, again, by his own account, requests by various Russians, including the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to meet with Trump and or to meet with Trump campaign officials if Trump himself was unavailable. So we know that he had regular contact up through the structure of the campaign. It is entirely possible, however, that he was peripheral to the campaign in other ways.
Right. Well, today, reporters asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders about that quite a few times, and in reference to a specific photograph, for example, where George Papadopoulos is photographed seated around a table where Donald Trump is also at the same table. But Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that the president didn't recall, you know, the specifics around that meeting. So you're right. That still is an open question. But
we'll have to find out about that, and I'm sure we will.
Yeah. But what are we to make of the fact of these repeated efforts, again, between Papadopoulos and, it seems like, significant members of the Russian government, whoever this professor was, and then there's also a relative of Russian President Vladimir Putin that's referred to in this guilty plea?
Yeah, there are three people mentioned as interlocutors of Papadopoulos in the documents. One is the professor, who's not named, who's described as based in the UK. And he seems to have been someone who was a connection to the Russians rather than himself a Russian, but again, hard to tell from the documents. Then he introduced Papadopoulos to someone whom Papadopoulos thought was a niece of Vladimir Putin, although it turns out in a footnote to the documents that she was not, in fact, a niece to Vladimir Putin, but was somebody connected to Russia in some way. Mm-hmm. And then there's a third person described whom Papadopoulos met only over email, who's described as, quote, the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs connection, and who is treated in the document as somebody with the capacity actually to connect the campaign to the Russian government, specifically to an ambassador in London. It, again, needs to be said, for full disclosure and honesty reasons, that no meeting, in fact, occurred.
Right.
Despite the fact that Papadopoulos considered himself to have been invited or to be a potential invitee, and despite the fact that by his account, the campaign said, go ahead and have the meeting if it seems it's a good idea, no meeting, in fact, ultimately took place.
So then back to the question that Jim Acosta asked White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I mean, he said, is it collusion? We heard her answer that he was that Papadopoulos was a minor player in the campaign. I mean, is what you see in Papadopoulos' guilty plea, do you think that there's some evidence of collusion there?
I would define collusion as going in two directions. I think receipt of information from abroad that helped the campaign, which, by the way, doesn't seem to have actually occurred here, but it could have occurred, would seem to me to be one-directional assistance and very bad. But collusion, to me, requires something that runs in both directions. It would have required some coordination or affirmative response or similar action from within the Trump campaign. Fairly read, I don't think these documents themselves show collusion. What they do show is that people within the Russian government were trying, in what appears to be a fairly systematic way, to reach out and make connections with the Trump administration. The $64,000 question is, did they bite? Did the Trump administration ultimately engage in any sort of coordinated communications? Otherwise, this is, you know, a little more extreme than what happened in the Donald Trump Jr. meeting, where ultimately, by his account, he walked away from the meeting saying there's nothing here, because here you had an American who was at least intrigued and interested. But the campaign ultimately is not shown here to have actively coordinated.
So this is one of the first actions that we know that that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has taken. We'll get to the Manafort indictments here in just a second.
Sure.
But this George Papadopoulos' guilty plea, like, nobody knew anything about until it was unsealed today. And given the fact that it's one of the first things made public here that we're learning about, vis-a-vis what Mueller has been investigating, I mean, this is early on. So in the history of these things, is this an indication that Robert Mueller may have more?
It's very difficult to judge, and I'll tell you why. On the one hand, you might ask, why did Papadopoulos lie to the FBI? You know, if anyone's out there thinking about this, it's never a good idea to lie to the FBI. If they figure it out, that is itself a crime, and that is exactly what Papadopoulos was charged with. What he did previously wasn't apparently a crime. The crime was lying about it. So there is a question of, you know, what, there was smoke here. Was there fire? Was he covering up something more? If indeed he was covering up something further, it is not disclosed in this document. Mm-hmm. Now, that either means that he's told it to the Mueller team, and the Mueller team did not include it in this document because it wasn't legally obligatory to include it, and they were waiting to use it in the future, which is one possibility, or he really didn't have anything further to report, in which case they wanted it to come out today in order to make sure that the Manafort story was not the only story. And we could talk more about why they might have wanted that to be the case.
Okay, so let's do that. But I just also want to let people know we're going to link to all the documents that we're talking about at radioboston.org. And the George Papadopoulos guilty plea, let me tell you, it makes for some gripping reading. I mean, the document also says that, like, he was interviewed by the FBI on February 16th, 2017. The next day, Papadopoulos deleted his Facebook account. On February 23rd, he ceased using his cell phone. And then he was arrested on July 20th. 27th, upon his return to the United States at Dulles International Airport, arrest which nobody knew about. So Robert Mueller holding a very tight ship here in terms of leaks.
But, absolutely. But one also does wonder how in the world anyone in this day and age could think that his old Facebook account would not be still accessible. But yeah, that's a separate question.
Okay, so to the question that you were raising yourself just a couple seconds ago, like, how does this relate to the Manafort indictment?
Well, what's striking is that it's a different angle than the Manafort indictment, because the Manafort indictment on its own does not draw any direct connection between the Trump campaign and Russia. What we see in the Manafort indictment is that Manafort and his associate Rick Gates were secretly and unlawfully lobbying on behalf of a pro-Russian party in Ukraine, and then ultimately on behalf of the government of Ukraine when that party came to power, that they hid that fact, which was a crime, that they got paid large amounts of money, many, many millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, which they put in offshore accounts, also a crime, and that they laundered that money in order to bring it to the U.S. to pay for things like renovations to their Hamptons homes, yet another crime. So those are all crimes. They show us that Manafort was connected to pro-Russian Ukrainians. But all of the events described in that indictment allegedly occurred, again, assuming that they occurred, they allegedly occurred between 2008 and 2013, so before there even was a Trump campaign.
Exactly, well before.
Exactly. So they're great leverage to flip Manafort if he's flippable, because Manafort, if these facts are proven, and it seems very probable that they would be, would go to jail potentially for a very long time. But they do not themselves draw a connection between Manafort and the Russians for purposes of collusion. And so you could imagine from the Mueller team's perspective that although they have publicized the Manafort indictment and they're trying to flip Manafort, they also wanted there to be a component in the public narrative where there does seem to be some evidence of potential collusion. And that's what the Papadopoulos documents suggest.
Right. And we still have so much more ahead of us in terms of what Mueller and his team are working on and what the future holds for Paul Manafort himself. And I'm just saying here that Manafort and Gates have been released to home confinement. Manafort on $10 million bond and Gates on $5 million bond. So a lot yet to be discovered and discussed. Noah Feldman, Harvard Law School professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure.